It's hard to see yourself represented on the silver screen. In a world with less available roles to us, this industry can be so mean. So we're gonna make some changes in this town. Turn the male-driven media upside down. There's nothing that a woman can't do. So act like a girl, we're here to support you.
I'm Matt.
I'm Kat.
We rhyme. I'm the book writer for Sweethearts of Swing.
And I am the composer lyricist.
How we decided to write about this subject. I discovered a book in the library when I was researching something else that had this whole chronology of all of these all-female swing bands in the 1940s. And I just went, what? I did not know this was a thing. And I checked it out, I read it, and I pretty much screamed and called Kat and was like, oh my god, you have to read this book right now! And we went around with a few different ideas of what shape we wanted the story to take, and I just could not... To me, the thing that had the most, like, emotional charge in it was this racial component of women crossing color boundaries to play music together, even though it was totally against the law to do that in the Jim Crow South. And so that's the angle of the story that we decided to enter with.
And I think part of the story I like to tell is that Nat was drawn to that in part because, you know, like many artists, you give up a lot for your artistic career. And Nat used to be an opera singer before she became a playwright. And I think you said to me one time, you're like, I've given up a lot for my opera career, but I've never actually risked my life. And these women sort of just doing what they were doing, just whether it was ambition or drive or the desire to be a musician, or just simply that was the career option that was most attractive of the ones available, they were just doing what they were doing, and sort of in the path of that ended up becoming activists and fighting for civil rights. I'd say in terms of all swing music, I've always loved big band swing music. It was the first genre of music sort of that I independently came to and fell in love with on my own. Like, I grew up, my parents listened to classical music, and I heard 80s pop and rock from my big sister. And then I discovered my grandparents' tape collection of, you know, like Glenn Miller and Count Basie and music from the World War II era, because they were, my grandpa was a World War II vet, my grandma was a physical therapist during World War II, so that era sort of had that. And that music of that era had sort of that charge and familiarity and love of it. I'd say for the score, I love listening to Count Basie and Duke Ellington, but also like blues and gospel, particularly in this last rewrite. And all the great soloists of that era, and just the ethos of both playing structured things in a band with a band where it's planned out, and taking off and improvising, and these women had both those skills to a really high degree, as do the women playing that music now.
Yeah, I mean, I researched so many things, it's kind of hard to think of a concise list, but there were a number of different bands that I researched that existed at the time. There were the Darlings of Rhythm, the Prairie View Co-eds, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm, Ada Leonard and her
Melodeers,
I think. So all those different bands, and I watched a lot of movies that were just set in the era, not necessarily about music or the industry, but just to kind of get as many movies I could find that were set in the South in the 30s and 40s, to just try to get as much of a feel of the culture and the time. And we did a lot of interviews as well in the South with people to kind of who were alive then or close to then. So a lot of it's tried to take from, while we're not using any actual stories, it's all just inspired by true stories. I did try to fill it with as much authenticity as possible by understanding the era as much as I could.
And I'd say, as far as the soloists I mentioned, say, like Clora Bryant, the trumpeter who was a soloist a little bit later than the era, but also Buck Clayton, a number, most of them obviously ones we're still listening to are male, but you know, every now and then, and the singers of the era, Ella Fitzgerald, of course, and Sarah Vaughan, that great, where the horns and the singers go back and forth, kind of taking ideas from each other, and the horns imitate singers, and the singers imitate the horns, and it goes back and forth, and it's about listening to each other.
So one of my favorite things about the show is that, and you can say this in your answer if you want, but I think one of the coolest things about the show is that the two male characters are the ones who play all the different parts, and they're like supporting the females who are playing the stationary parts. And generally, I feel like in musicals, it's like always the other way around. Like in Jersey Boys, you know, they have like just the three girls that play, like they play like something like 17 parts each, crazy things, and then the boys all get to play their character the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So like thinking of that, and then thinking of like writing and creating a show that's all women, but like what is that like? Can you tell me about that process and like how different that must be than like anything anybody else is doing and anything you've ever done before? Talk about that.
Yeah. So it is, I think, somewhat different to have a show that features 13 female, actually 14, there's one we're not meeting in this iteration, 14 female characters. And while there are a lot of male characters, there are only two male actors. There will be more dancers in the Broadway production that will also, there will be a couple of men there. But yeah, I mean, I think for that was so part of the story just organically. It wasn't like I set out that that was going to be it, but there was a decision that was made at one point a couple of rewrites ago where we had more men in the show who were playing different characters, and even then they were still doubling, but we decided to actively go for the choice of putting in a token white man. So we have one white man who plays all of the white male roles. And
in part because it's possible and serves the story.
Yeah, and it did a couple of interesting things. One was bringing the cast size down for roles that were less insignificant in the story, but also it allowed me to paint that not all white people were the same, actually, in that, because I didn't want to have, like, this one guy only plays the super, super awful racist guy. So you have one actor who's playing guys who are super, super, super violently racist, then you have ones who are kind of just indifferent, and then you have ones who actually don't, you know, who do feel strongly that it's wrong. So you get some flavors of that it by showing it with one person, that you get actually more layers that way a little bit of sort of different ways that white people were part of the problem and in the era and not sometimes trying to not be part of the problem. Yeah.
I'd say it didn't occur to me, at least, that we were doing anything out of the ordinary. We were just telling an important story that needed to be told, and through the process of writing and rewriting and trying to get produced and building the show and building the community and the team around it, it has become apparent to me and both of us that this is unusual. And it's been both a shock and not a shock to my system of like, oh, of course it's weird. Of course it is. And of course it's not weird to me that I would want to tell a story about women musicians, because I am a woman and I am a musician. And I've been a band nerd pretty much my whole life, and this show is for band nerds. It's by, for, and about band nerds.
Yeah. It's a particularly interesting moment to be two white writers telling the story, as there's a lot of questioning, like, sort of who... Because so many stories have always been told by white men, particularly, and there's been more emphasis, you know, on women playwrights in general in the last few years, has there actually been like theater companies seeking for more parity on their on that side. I actually kind of wondered when I first started writing this if I kind of had the right to tell this story, and part of what. Because we do have a white character who is entering this world, I kind of felt like, well, I feel like I can get myself in her head, and then we're going to surround ourselves with a lot of women of color in the process to see how their view of the story, to see what I'm not seeing, and help me call me out, you know, when my privilege is showing, and to, like, help to make sure the story does feel authentic, and it is a story that is flavored by race, but it isn't actually a race story in the sense that it's really about these musicians who are fighting with, who are trying to make music within a racist society. as opposed to like that there are race dynamics within the characters of the band, is that, if that makes sense. So, I mean, that becomes part of the story later, but it, a lot of it is really about musicians, and that I felt like was a story I could tell. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that was an entree in for me. And then again, making sure that we've had a lot of people in our creative process who are people of color to help make sure that the story is feeling authentic.
I think one thing I feel really strongly about is, you know, it's really easy, and there's sort of a big payoff in diverse casting, whether it's a revival of a show, you know, like a Rodgers and Hammerstein show, like that. That's the easy part. But the fact is, art needs to be It needs to represent the people whose stories it is from the top down. So I think yes, Nat and I are writers together, and you know, it was our idea to write this show and tell this story that is not only ours. So I think it is very important to us that in this collaborative process, once we, you know, bringing on a director and music director and the cast and designers, like, it's important to us to have that be a diverse team, and for it, the process to be created in such a way that people can feel comfortable to speak, you know, speak their minds and speak their authentic experience throughout the process. And we've certainly experienced that in this step of the process, you know, with these past 3 days of rehearsal and the weeks previous when we've been having conversations with our awesome director, Shelley Williams, and just having her lead the room has been an incredible
yes.
experience. And the way she allows conversations to happen in an organic way without, you know, stifling what people may be thinking or feeling about the material in the script. And some of, you know, some of it's very difficult. There are very difficult situations that the women we are telling the story about in the 1940s experienced. And so, and as she said something the other day about all of us, herself included, have more privilege than the women of the 1940s, regardless of the color of our skin. And so telling the story about these women, you know, getting in their heads brings up certain feelings in the performers who have to portray them. And she's just been so great about allowing those feelings to come up and for that to be talked about and dealt with while still, you know, while also not losing track of shaping, telling the story for the people who we want to tell it to, who should also know this story and this history. So I take it as sort of, as a band nerd, I take it as sort of a personal insult when somebody tells me we can't cast this show, like, because the subtext of it is, there's a subtext I read, and maybe I'm taking it personally because of my experiences, but there's a subtext of women don't play jazz, women of color don't play jazz, there's that can't, won't, shouldn't to it that just made me sort of become even more determined to cast this show and be like, I will show you that, in fact, they do. That said,
amazing.
Yeah, and that said, the challenge is, yes, you need someone who has this skill set. They need to also have this skill set, and they need to have one of these identities as a human. You know, they need, most of the roles are women of color, and so that Venn diagram is smaller number of people. Every, you know, other thing they have to do or be. So yes, it's a smaller community than, say, if we were casting a singer, actor who is blonde and can sound and look like she's from the Midwest. That is a larger community of people because those types of shows have existed for decades. But one of the things I like to say is, you know, when I was playing rehearsals and auditions for In the Heights when it was running for the first time after 2008, we saw lots and lots and lots of people for Usnavi, and that who could rap, and some of whom had musical theater chops, but it was a small community of people who could both really be authentically hip-hop and who had the skill set to do a musical and to go through that process where there are changes. It's two different art forms coming together and two different skill sets in a new way, and it's kind of the same thing we're doing. So I like to say, well, you know, when there's In the Heights, there weren't that many people who knew how to play Usnavi, and now there's Hamilton. So why would you decide to be an actor who also plays the trumpet? There are not that many people who do it because there are not that many shows that require it. But, you know, now we're doing it, so 5 years from now there will be Hamilton with brass. So, I mean, Nat has some great stories about, we have done a lot of outreach and finding our community, because it doesn't exist, you know, in the casting files at, you know, Kelsey or Tara Rubin or the usual musical theater casting directors. So,
yeah, it's been a process we've done over the last couple of years. I mean, even before that, actually, because when we just like did our very, very first reading in 2013, but we really made it a big push last year. We produced a bunch of jam slams only for women musicians, and so we really got to know a lot of women in the community in New York. And so we were able to find more women that then we kept in touch with, and kind of try to go through our networks then to say, okay, who is available, who knows people who might fit this very carefully worded audition announcement about the importance of authentic casting, that these women all be women of color, because you aren't, of course, allowed to actually say that. So it was a little... That was a little challenging, but then we, one of the things I did in the script was also to not make the saxophone player has to definitely be the Latina character, or the trumpet player has to, you know, like, I tried to make it so that you could kind of fit the characters that we found, the instrumentalists that we found, to whatever, the character was more important than what instrument they played, basically. So not tying a lot of plot points specifically to what instrument that they played, so that made our casting process a little bit more flexible.
So we do have the specific big band instruments, but the big band, the four trumpet players do not need to be these specific four characters. We can switch them around and cast each company of Sweethearts, because there will be multiple companies of Sweethearts, as, you know, the group of people that makes sense for that band, that Sweethearts band.
Yeah. Oh, the future of Sweethearts of Swing is Broadway.
And beyond.
What does feminism mean to us?
To me, the greatest privilege is to be able to be an individual and to choose what you want to do with your time on this planet without feeling like you need to... You know, I think there's an expectation of women and people of color that if you do something, it's to lift up others like you. And while that's great and altruistic, you also, you know, you get seen as a type rather than as an individual human being with gifts and talents and wishes of what to use your life for. So in my mind, we'll know we have gotten there when it stops being about, oh, wow, you're writing a feminist show. No, I'm telling a story about these really interesting people who have interesting things to say.
Yeah, I think it's... I want to see women portrayed in all their glory and all their horribleness and in all of their... Like, I don't want people to feel like they have to be pigeonholed. And I think that it's probably kind of the same thing that you were just saying, that very complex, well-rounded, fully expressed characters that happen to also be women. I want to tell more of those stories, and I think this show really does that, because it shows us a side of women that I don't know how many people that have ever actually sat and watched a band of nothing but women musicians before. Especially not if it's not like the Go-Go's, but like a big band, not the Go-Go's.
Yeah.
But you know, so I think that but they're real. They're all real people, and it's not a gimmick. It's not like a kitschy thing. Oh, isn't that cute? They're girls who can play. Oh, you play really well for a girl. Like, no, these are really fierce women with really complex stories and, you know, layers and full people.
Feminism means being a full person, even as a woman.